Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Andrew Shatkin Blog Talk Radio Show, which is a show of political incorrectness. And the main thing is that we handle a number of different areas in this show. I defined my background in these areas last night, in order to leave time today to speak on the issue of the meaning of the suffering of Christ. But I'll go through those other things a little bit. The basic parameters of this show are I have a great interest in literature and great books, such as War and Peace and A Passage to India and T.S. Eliot. And I also have a great Christian commitment and to Holy Scripture and to the creeds of the Church and to the great Christian books such as St. Augustine and St. Paul, for starters. Next, I also have a political position. It's generally conservative, but I do follow the dictates of Christ in his concern for the poor and underclass. Now, a little bit about myself. This is a politically incorrect show. Namely, we're not in for political correctness. We don't aim for media hype, media falsehoods, political lies. We don't do that here. We try to engage in critical thinking to tear apart the curtains of lies and darkness to get at the truth and the facts with intellectual honesty and honest discernment. Second, this is a Christian show, as I mentioned. I welcome all faiths because Jesus reveals himself to every human being that has ever lived and died for them, all generations and all men and women. So I have no issue with other faiths. I welcome them. I dialogue with them. I want to hear from my Islamic brothers and sisters, from my Shintoist brothers and sisters, from my Confucian brothers and sisters, etc. I want to hear from all because they represent to me the face of the love of Christ. Jesus died for them, gave his life for them, cast down his life for them. I'm not about to exclude them. Second, I run two radio shows, a podcast show and a blog talk radio show. These shows are Christian orientation, but as I say, they are visited by many people all over the world of various religions and faiths, and I welcome all people, all men, who Christ died for and gave his life for. Next, I have written 10 books, Christian books and legal books. The Christian books are Essays in the Christian Worldview, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, a book on the parables. I've written lately a book on the Psalms and parables are very significant to me. The parables are the mind and thoughts of Christ. I read them constantly because I want to know what the Son of God has to communicate to me that's important in the parables. I also very much admire the Psalms. They are great. John Donne said of the Psalms, they are the manna of the church. They are spiritual food. They are great lyric poetry. I read them in Hebrew in seminary, and I also memorized the 1st, 2nd, and 23rd Psalm as a young person in Sunday school. Psalms are the greatest lyric poetry you can find, and they represent the thoughts of God communicated to man in a very effective fashion. I never tire of the Psalms. I may tire of other books, but I don't think anybody ever tires of the Psalms. And it, certainly in any translation, which indicates their greatness. I'm writing other books. I'm writing 4 blog books of my blogs, political, religious, political, religious, and theological and philosophical. 4 blog books. I'm writing a book on the miracles of the Bible. I'm writing a book on criminal hearings and criminal law. I wrote a section of New York jurisprudence on criminal law and demands and notices. And I also am writing a book on the miracles of the Bible. I've written 1 chapter, and I intend to finish it. And I'm also writing a book on the book of Job. Job is a great book. Job was an Edomite. He wasn't Jewish. But God chose him for his trials to see how he could be tried by the Lord. The book of Job is a great book. It's modeled on Greek drama. And he is thought to have come from a Greek background. I think so. So that's what I'm doing these days. I've written other books. a book on evidence, Res Gestae, in Bender's Consolidated Evidence. I've written a chapter on paternity in New York Law and Family Practice, New York Family Law and Practice. I wrote the chapter on paternity, and I'm in the process of writing other books very soon. For example, I've written 3 major law review articles, one in the Syracuse Law Review, sold to the United States Supreme Court and the State Department. It's a review of the criminal procedure in the state of New York. I have also written 2 articles for Academicus, a Albanian scientific journal, on the United States educational system. I find fault with it, and on sexual orientation discrimination. I abhor any form of discrimination and hatred for any group, and that includes our dear gay brothers and friends. Now, I'm going to now talk about the suffering of Christ. This is a mysterious process, because what good is it that a person is in pain and suffers? What does it mean? In the 4 Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the final sufferings of Christ are very specifically related, and we have to try to understand what is good about someone in pain and enduring pain. Let's look at what Matthew says in chapter 26. It is said the chief priests and elders of the people gather in the palace of the high priest and take counsel together to arrest Jesus by stealth before executing him. They take counsel together to arrest Jesus. Matthew relates that Judas Iscariot goes to the chief priests and asks what he would be compensated for with the delivery of Jesus, and they pay him 30 pieces of silver. Matthew also relates that Pontius Pilate makes a decision not to release Jesus, but to release Barabbas, and then washes his hands of the entire situation. So you can see Jesus was subject to great torture and suffering. The chief priests and elders of the people gathered in the palace of the king and of the high priest and decided to arrest Jesus before executing him. So Jesus was being arrested and then was subject to execution. And Judas, the traitor, goes to the chief priest and asks what he would be compensated for the delivery of Jesus. And they pay him 30 pieces of silver. So again, Jesus is being betrayed by one of his disciples. We can see his suffering here. His arrest is suffering. The act of Judas is suffering. The fact the priests and the elders of the people gather to arrest Jesus is suffering. It's suffering, further suffering, that Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, makes a decision not to release Jesus, but to release Barabbas, and then washes his hands of the entire situation. Again, further suffering for Jesus in not being released. And then have the Roman governor saying, this is it, I don't care, which is a very frequent phenomenon, people not caring about anybody. Subsequently in that chapter, it is related that the soldiers strip Jesus. Again, Jesus is being stripped and put a scarlet robe upon him and a crown of thorns upon his head and a reed in his right hand, then mock and spit upon him and take the reed and strip him of the robe before leading him away to crucifixion. So we have further suffering and humiliation that Jesus must endure. The soldiers strip Jesus, and they put a scarlet robe upon him, as if he's a king. They know he's not a king. He's suffering. They place a crown of thorns upon his head. Again, further suffering. Put a reed in his right hand, and then mock and spit upon him, and take the reed, and strip him of the robe, leading him to crucifixion. And this is all acts of suffering and great suffering that Jesus is enduring. And after the crucifixion, Jesus' garments are divided among everyone by casting lots. Again, further suffering, further humiliation. His garments are divided by casting lots. The events surrounding the crucifixion are stated in Matthew, verses 37 to 54 of chapter 26. Mark gives a rendition of these events in chapter 14 and 15 of the Gospel of Mark, and Luke also relates to these events in chapters 22 and 23 of the Gospel of Luke. In the Gospel of John, a similar scene of events is set forth in chapters 18 and 19. These events are widely known to many people, or a bit of a commonplace, at least in the West here, and with their conversions in Asia and Africa. These events become widely known. And what are people going to say with this great suffering this man is enduring, being arrested and crucified and humiliated in every way and betrayed? Many people might say, too bad. They might say that a religious troublemaker ran into problems, or at least had enemies that moved against him. But the wider issue here is not to understand that perhaps too bad, and that a religious troublemaker had run into difficulties, and his enemies had moved against him. That's one interpretation. But the wider issue presented by this great suffering that Jesus is going through here is what this means. And we have to understand that the suffering of Jesus is a model or paradigm for the suffering of any what the suffering of any person means to anyone. The suffering of Jesus is the suffering of all men and women in the world. In many instances, to many people, their lives are busy and they have no concern or time for the difficulties of others. Perhaps they have no real concern at all. It's a possibility. Their lives are too busy and they have no concern or time for other people or their suffering. But we have this Jesus enduring this suffering, and it means he is relating to the suffering of all men and women in the world. But we all know that for many people, their lives are too busy and they have no concern or time for the difficulties of others. Perhaps they have no real concern at all. But there is and Jesus is one of them, there's a small minority of people who may dedicate their lives to alleviating the sufferings of others. They may be connected with the church. On the other hand, they could be connected with any humanitarian group. These people are a step ahead of the rest of us. But I'd like to try to understand a deeper meaning to the sufferings of Christ. As I said, the sufferings of Christ represent and are a picture of the suffering of men, all men and women, that he took upon himself to endure. So his suffering is a relationship, in relationship to the suffering of all men and women. The sufferings of Christ here, they point us to the suffering of others. And his suffering means that when we understand intellectually and emotionally the suffering of Christ, we can join with him, and he joins with us in comprehending, emphasizing, and understanding the suffering of all men and individuals. So his suffering points us to the sufferings of all men and women, and in his sufferings, we come to understand and share in the suffering of Christ, and we join with him in comprehending and understanding the suffering of all men and individuals. So the suffering of Jesus points us to the suffering of all men and enables us to emphasize and understand their suffering as he took upon himself to understand their suffering. In God's becoming a human being and enduring the great suffering that Christ endured, he joins with us and asks to join with us, understands our difficulties in suffering. He joins and seeks and comprehends and has compassion for the suffering of all men and women all over the world. In his suffering, he joins with us in our suffering and understands our difficulties. In this sense, he knows in his suffering what each of us as human beings is going through and grasps our difficulties. In his suffering, he understands what we go through, and he emphasizes and grasps our difficulties. He shares our difficulties and is moved into them. The result is here that he shares our difficulties and suffering, and we, in relation to him, come to understand his sufferings that he endured for all humanity and the sufferings of others and all men and women. And he enables us to understand in his suffering and have compassion for the sufferings of others, knowing how he suffered for each one of us to the point of death. So his sufferings point us to his compassion and his love, and he brings us to understand the sufferings of each of us as human being. He shares our sufferings and is moved by them. When we understand the sufferings of Christ that he endured, he points us to the suffering of all men and women and to have compassion for their suffering, knowing how he suffered for each of us to death. When we understand the sufferings and sacrifices of Christ, he enables us in his suffering to enter into and fully deal with the suffering that will inevitably come upon all of us and is endured by all men and women. God became a human being and suffered for all persons. In that suffering, he tells us what we should be and what we should do. By his relationship of his suffering, we are led into a deeper relationship with human beings who suffer and come to understand their difficulties, what they have faced is, and what we will be faced with. So, yes, in his suffering, he brings us to his suffering, but then he shares our difficulties, and then he enables us to understand the sufferings of all men and women and to have compassion for their suffering. When we understand his sufferings, we can to some extent enter into and deal with the suffering that will inevitably come upon us and is represented by the suffering of all men and women in their lives. By his example, we are led into a greater and deeper relationship, not only with him who suffered greatly, but to those who suffer, and we come to understand what their difficulties are, what they are faced with, what we will be faced with. I've given some insights into this matter. I hope you've enjoyed this talk and that it has raised your consciousness. I certainly enjoyed speaking about it. I know that when I see the sufferings of Christ, I see the sufferings of all men and women, and he joins in his suffering with the sufferings of all men and women in his compassion and love. That, I think, is a proper interpretation of his sufferings, and you can find a chapter in my book, Essays in Faith, Culture, Politics, and Philosophy, on this topic. I've enjoyed talking about this tonight. Good night.